It is Saturday, August 4th, 2009. August 1st, I believe. Yeah, August 1st, 2009. 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, geek news and your questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on the program, we're starting with geek news in the first half, and during the second half, we're inviting you to take your calls to add your conversation to ours. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org right now to send us an email or participate in our forums. And I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me, I have Ryder Brooks. He's a support engineer at Sun Microsystems. Good morning.
Good morning.
And over the internets with Skype, I've got Ben Jaffe. And Ben Jaffe is a freelance media guy and currently an instructor in San Diego. Oh, and I don't have you queued up. So let me do that. Hi, Ben. Good morning, sir. And we also have a special guest today. We have Jesse Wilkins. Jesse Wilkins is a mobile computer support guy. It's wilkinsconsulting.us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, you're on mic one. Mm.
Excellent.
Good morning.
We're all powered up now. We've got all the mics working. Everybody's tuned in. And let's start the news. Ben, let's start with you.
Yeah. We have discovered a new state of matter. And here to introduce us to this new state of matter are DeForest Kelly and James Doohan.
Transparent aluminum?
That's the ticket, laddie.
It'd take years just to figure out the dynamics of this matrix.
Yes, but you would be rich beyond the dreams of avarice.
So, is that worth something to you? Or should I just punch up clear?
No.
Transparent aluminum from Star Trek. Is it
transparent aluminum? Yes.
What's the story? What's going on?
It turns out we have actually made it somewhat. It was at Oxford University, which is in the UK. So that's the first red flag. We all know that transparent aluminum was actually first created in San Francisco. The Star Trek canon.
The temporal modification version. And with the new Star Trek movie, we'll find that everything changes, so therefore that didn't happen, so it can show up anywhere.
Travel. Never meddle with time. That's the moral of the story. The flash laser, which is the most powerful soft X-ray laser in Hamburg, they used it to bombard aluminum with soft X-rays. And soft X-rays aren't the type that you would go and get an X-ray with. Their lower energy, so they don't actually penetrate skin or anything. So anyway, they did this, and they knocked out a core electron from every aluminum atom in a sample without disrupting the metal's crystalline structure, which turned it mostly transparent. There's a catch. Mostly transparent to extreme UV radiation. So not to visible color or the visible light spectrum or anything.
And it became stable and electrons didn't saturate back in somehow?
Define stable. There's another catch.
Okay.
It was only invisible for an estimated 40 femtoseconds.
Well, that's useless. Completely useless.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, okay, so it's not the kind of thing that you would want to use to try to transport whales back to another time. But it is an ideal way, as they say, to create and study such exotic states of matter, and will lead to further work relevant to areas as diverse as planetary science, astrophysics, and nuclear fusion power. Just quoting there from the article. As far as research goes, studying things, that's kind of it's pretty cool.
Thank you, Ben.
As far as actually using it to I don't know, build
make
a
make a tank for
tank?
A whale mm-hmm. no. In a Klingon bird of prey. Not so,
yeah.
Not so good.
Anyone who didn't catch the reference, watch Star Trek IV. You'll love it.
Watch Star Trek multiple times. Thank you very much, Ben, for that new state of matter information. Ryder, can we get something more tangible, something more in our hands?
Sure. How about it's easy to hack your iPhone now.
Ooh, I like that.
If you don't have it patched. Apparently researchers publicized on Thursdays that there was a vulnerability from the Black Hat Cybersecurity Conference in Las Vegas. They'd been sitting on some information for about a month that they'd told Apple about, but hadn't fixed until it was a day or two after they publicly announced that their 3.0 release of the iPhone could be remotely hacked by a simple SMS message. So apparently there was a vulnerability. They could send a specially coded text message that would allow remote hijacking of your phone, which could take control of your camera and do things like extract your contact information.
Find out where you are.
And you actually have to power off your phone in order to reset it.
So, and every time you power off your phone, this thing goes away? Or is it
goes away, but they could just resend it again as soon as you power it on again.
So is there a fix for that completely?
There was a fix. Apple released.
That was quick.
Yes. Although, you know, I take issue with the fact that they waited until it was publicly released before they put a fix out.
Maybe they didn't know about it.
No, they told them over a month ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and
also,
Apple has a history of basically sitting on stuff and not taking action on it unless they have to.
Yeah, that's not good.
But they did. You know, the day after that they publicly announced the vulnerability, they did come out with a 3.01 iPhone OS update.
So get that hacked.
Definitely get it.
And the other thing I would assume is that it's one of those things where if the package could get delivered through, we talked about this kind of problem before, if the package could come through SMS, theoretically the carrier, like AT&T, could restrict the packet length and restrict the actual ability to send a message that could do that if they filtered them. But we assume that AT&T is not on top of their game to do that. So anyway, it's good that Apple's done that. So update your iPhone software. Also at a Black Hat Conference, 2009 Black Hat Conference, another thing that's going to be a lot harder to fix was emerged, and that is that Joe Grand, Jacob Applebaum, and Chris Tervonsky presented a study of parking meters, electronic parking meter industry, and focusing specifically on San Francisco's parking meters. They were able to there's these pay cards that you get. You can get a prepaid card, and you go to the meter, and you just put it in, and it deducts the amount. Well, what they did is they bought one of these meters off of eBay, and then they got a card from the county, and they started using it and backwards and figured it out. Reverse engineered how the communication happens, and we're able to make cards that have an unlimited amount of money. And they did this relatively easily. They're not giving the details of their software and all that. They were clear enough that other people could copy what they did, but they're allowing San Francisco to fix the problem. Of course, it's a little different because these parking meters, I'm assuming, are not wirelessly programmable. Yeah. So you got to go around and change these
physically
things.
Physically update them, yeah.
One thing they could do is just, you know, pour lead in the slot, and then they wouldn't have that problem. So anyway, right now you could spend a couple days and figure out how to get free parking in San Francisco, why it lasts, and of course it would be illegal. And other metropolitan areas use the very similar system. So that's also out of the Black Hat 2009. Now, Black Hat refers to hacking. There's a White Hat, Gray Hat, and Black Hat hacking, and it's off of film noir. You know, the Black Hat guys or the bad guys.
Let me inject another one too that I wasn't going to cover, but now that we're on this security thread here, I don't actually think it came from Black Hat. I think it came from somewhere else. But apparently, there's also a vulnerability with the application updates. You know, automated updates you can do over the internet through your application. Apparently, if you're doing that over Wi-Fi, unsecured Wi-Fi, it's very easy to actually insert malware into that thing. You basically get something that's monitoring and looking for HTTP
updates
and basically injecting a redirect, an HTTP redirect, and inserting malware. So
what we're talking about is that when your application itself can say, hey, there's a new update available, go ahead and update. And every time I've done this, I've gotten used to it now, but every time it happens, I'm like, well, this looks bad. Because basically what you're saying is my application, which I know is safe, is going to go connect through the internet, which isn't safe, get some application code, bring it back, and start running it. And they're just like, that's just such a scary thing. And what you assume, of course, is that it's secure and it's safe. And and of course, Windows updates and Apple's updates are very secure like that. But everybody can write one of these things.
Yeah.
And people aren't so good on secure.
And basically, what you need to do is you need to sign your content and have a digital signature, essentially, that can verify what you're receiving is from from who you think it's coming from.
And hacks, I mean, geeks in the know, look at this. There's an MD5 hash that when you download an application, you can then check it. And whether people do it or not, it's a little difficult to do. We need it more built into the operating system for it to be simple, because sometimes I don't do it. Lots of times I don't do it. Yeah. All right, well, speaking of security, Jesse, what's going on with BayFed?
Yeah, BayFed recently instigated some new security measures requiring the Flash player for your web browser.
So if you're talking about like online banking.
Yeah, so online banking, this is obviously bigger and bigger. More companies are offering it. Pretty much every bank has online banking. And so BayFed, really a local credit union, they put this Flash requirement on their website because they're actually trying to analyze your typing rhythm.
Oh, really?
And so they're going to differentiate between, say, if me and Lyle shared a bank account, if I log in, they'll sense that I'm typing differently than he types. And they'll say, sorry, you know, you're not Lyle, go away.
They'll ask another question of you or something.
It's quite interesting. Yeah, so there's security questions they'll prompt you for.
What I find really irritating is that the BayFed has a member ID, which is like 9 digits long, and you have to memorize that. You can't have a user name. Yeah. And so every time I go to BayFed, what I've been doing before is I've got my secure password management application, and I grab that, copy it, and paste it in. Well, they won't allow you to paste into this application, so you've got to type it. Which means I'm learning
membership code. Yes, you start to memorize different numbers every day.
Yeah. Well, if you have software that can detect your typing rhythms, that kind of limits your drunken banking.
Yes. That's the whole point.
I'll pay all my bills right now, and we'll get to dollar.
Prevent those computers from hacking in, you know, entering like a steady stream of characters or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's not the whole point. The point is, if you're a Mac user running other OS 9, which some people still do, you're out of luck.
Time to change banks.
OS 10, if you're using something before OS 10.4, 10.3, 2.1, 0, the Flash player that you're going to have to use is version 9. And as far as I can tell, there's not an automated way to install that. Yeah. So you've got to manually install the plugins for Flash 9. So for those of you who are listening and need to do this, follow their links to get the Flash 9 player, but you've got to unpack it and then manually drag the two Flash little pieces of data in there to a hard drive location.
I assume you know this because you've been helping people with
this problem. I have. I've helped a few people this last week or so, and so we'll see. You're going to open your hard drive up. You're going to go to the library folder, and there's a folder there called Internet Plugins. Drag the Flash updates into there. Say yes to override the existing ones, and you should be set.
And have your browser off while you do this.
Have your browser off. It'll probably readdress them anyway when you reopen it, or even if it was open currently. But have your browsers closed. Do recommend using Firefox from Mozilla.com. And you need to get Firefox version 2.something on one of those older computers. So you're going to have to find that somewhere too.
So this is not an easy process.
No, it's a bunch of steps. It's easy if you know what you're doing, like I do, any geek probably could figure out. But it's tricky for the average user.
Yeah. And I would assume that if you're running OS 10, the one step that's a little simpler is getting Firefox. But Flash plugin's a little harder.
Yeah, obviously you can upgrade to 10.4 or 10.5, and it should just work.
And if you heard all that and went, wait, I didn't take notes fast enough, I'll have the show up on geekspeak.org later today. And, of course, we have a podcast. So if you missed the live version, go ahead and do that, and you can replay what Jesse just said, nice and slow.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Ben, what's going on in Yahoo world? Ben. For some reason, you just sound horrible. I'm not sure why. So I'm gonna say goodbye to you, and I'll call you right back. Everyone gets to hear a Skype call in action.
Must not be calling from the same place as last week, huh?
No, he's not. Call refused. Mm. This is not a good thing. We might have to move on. One more call. Hello? Man, I don't know what's going on. Well, you know what? Let's move on to another news story while I try to get Ben back on. I think, Ryder, it's up to you.
Okay. So there was Google Voice is a new service that came out recently. I'm not sure if it's public or if it's still in beta form. It's an invite policy. Anyway, it's a new service that Google has that allows you to map your various phone numbers to a Google phone number, and it basically allows you, it can do voice to text dictation and send you email, allows you to manage which phones you can ring, all these different phones. And they've also hooked in some smartphone applications, so you can use Google OS, I think there might be a. What else is there?
Can you describe it as a like a phone centralization thing where you give this one number and it kind of handles all your different services?
The service in general, yeah. It's intended to be, it's not a physical, you know, it doesn't...
Right. The idea was you'd get a phone number, you'd give that on everything you have, and then you could set up saying, you know what, now I want this phone number to go to my mobile, now I want this phone to go over here, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of it's a way to manage your phone, kind of like how we manage email to some degree. All right.
Exactly. And what they've done is they've released these smartphone applications that allow you to use your phone to do callbacks. Like you can use the internet connection to trigger it to call you. You can make outgoing calls at the same time. You know, it integrates their kind of their Skype type stuff.
Sure.
But what it allows primarily through your cell phone is you can trigger a callback where you can have Google call you with the person with who you want to call. So it doesn't use your outgoing minutes, use incoming minutes, things like that, and allow you to remotely control which number rings where and whatnot. And apparently Apple has basically rejected this application, which is interesting considering, you know, they have a pretty good relationship with Google and Google was disappointed by it, and you know, because they also have it available for their Android OS. And,
right.
I'm drawing a blank on what other OS is. BlackBerry, I think.
Right. And Skype has the calling app. I mean, I have it. It doesn't work on the network. You've got to use Wi-Fi to do it. But you can receive calls and send calls via Skype from your iPhone.
And so anyway, the FCC has launched an investigation on Apple's sort of rejection policies and how they do this, which was apparently triggered by this. And, you know, the general conclusion that you reach is that they do it because of the relationship with AT&T and the implications of basically bypassing, you know, using the cellular network for your phone calls and using Wi-Phone. And it's kind of a conflict of interest, I suppose.
I think this is the second story in a row where Google and Apple are kind of fighting with each other. I can't recall what last week's was, but
And one application that they bring up is interesting. You know, I guess their reason for it is that it uses excessive bandwidth network over their G3 network.
Yeah.
Even though they have other applications that are really heavily bandwidth intensive, like there's a Major League Baseball application.
Well,
and,
you know, it's interesting because of course we all know that's not the reason why AT&T and Apple doesn't want this to run. We know because it completely kills phone service. Like, you go to IP phone, and all of a sudden, and your phone calls on the phone are paid. You know, you have a certain amount of minutes, but the internet access on Apple's iPhone is completely free. So if you put all your traffic that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a conflict of interest towards AT&T's making money.
And the response, of course, will be that AT&T will start limiting bandwidth and do it that game instead.
So, but I think this is interesting.
I mean, if the FCC
is doing this, is that, you know, this could spell the end of Apple's, you know, pickiness to how they reject applications. I mean, it is pretty discriminatory and inconsistent
from
what I've seen.
Because I think the business model, I mean, if you do unlimited phones from, or, you know, calls, and you don't need to use their phone network, AT&T is not in a good position there. I mean, they'd have to change their policies if they lose that battle with FCC. All right, thank you for that story. Ben, so what's up with Yahoo?
All right, we'll try this again. So Yahoo is now in, as of the early hours of July 29th, in a 10-year deal with Microsoft, where Yahoo will no longer be pursuing developing their search technologies. Instead, they'll be using Microsoft search technologies. And Microsoft recently came out with Bing, which is their new search engine, and Yahoo is going to be using that, which is kind of strange because Yahoo has always been kind of synonymous with search for me. I mean,
I'm assuming that Yahoo will still have Yahoo.com as a searching tool, but it'll actually use the search engine Bing, which is Microsoft.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, they're also doing all kinds of funky things with how they deliver ads and who gets the revenue and what they're using Microsoft's Ad Center technology instead of Yahoo's to actually deal with the advertisements. But Yahoo's still involved, and it's a relatively complex thing. But the bottom line is Yahoo's not going to be doing their own searching anymore. They're going to be using Yahoo's, they're going to be using Bing, Microsoft's.
Yeah.
And this means that Yahoo's 20% of the market share is now going to be going to Bing and Microsoft.
There had to be
a lot
of money. There had to be a lot of money flowing. there had to be a lot of money flowing for this, you know?
Definitely. As far as long-term, this means that Yahoo's not going to be spending it's going to be spending $200 million less in development costs for their technology. And then after all the regulation gets done with, and assuming antitrust, you know, there aren't any antitrust issues, then it'll add an expected annual $500 million in revenue in operating income for Yahoo. So, I mean, a lot of changes. Definitely. We'll see if this actually impacts the front end. It'll certainly be completely different in the back end. We'll see if Yahoo's search results get better or worse.
Thanks, Ben. Hey, so back on the Bay Fed story of Jesse's, Miles calling in for the comment. Hi, Miles.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for calling in. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually in the car. I'm not driving, though. Okay. Heading back home.
So you'll be here soon. Can you help me move a couch at 12 at my house? Okay, anyway, what's your question, man?
Question is, as a Bay Fed customer, and I did notice that flash, that changeover, I was really curious as to why Flash was used for that as opposed to the JavaScript built into the browser itself.
Yeah.
Like, what is it special about Flash that allowed that to happen, or was it because they were purchasing an item that was already created in Flash?
Good question. You think they purchased it?
You know, somewhere on their site they talk about the security enhancements, and they say, out of the ones we chose this package is what it seemed like.
So, it sounds like somebody else already had it running. I mean, the thing about it that's kind of nice is that you really can rely on, if it can play at all, if Flash comes up at all, you can rely that it will function. But I feel the same way. It's like if they were just doing keystroke detection stuff, JavaScript would have been fine for this, and it would have been a lot lighter, and you wouldn't have had nearly as many install problems.
Yeah.
Right. The reason why I'm also bringing up, you brought up all of those issues with regard to older operating systems and older browsers and the like. My issue was that I was always checking my bank account for my iPhone.
Yeah. You can't
And in fairness to Bay Fed, I did get a response back from them when I messaged them that they were putting up a mobile version putting up an option for mobile access. I have not tried it yet, but still it's annoying to have access and then have it taken away from you.
Definitely.
So do you think the only reason they did this had to do with keystroke detection?
No. Obviously they wanted to enable more security.
Yeah.
And so this is the one they chose.
Bayfed's, you know, an owned by the members kind of space as a credit union. I'd love to get kind of the security people on the show to come in and chat with us about
definitely.
I want to know what the motivation was. I mean, it's definitely a headache for users.
Yeah, what brought up for me was the fact that over all those years working in web development, Lyle, you and I both, that there have been multiple vulnerabilities having to do with Flash. It seems like the more pieces you add, the worse security is. So I'd be really curious to know what security enhancements are brought from it that mitigate those.
I agree. Especially since it's not uncommon to go to a website and have a pop-up come, hey, you don't have the most recent version of Flash. Go ahead and install it. You do that on a site that then actually installs you a different version of Flash that you don't even know about. It's pretty easy for the user to have a bogus version of Flash, which doesn't normally matter, but when it redirects any Bay Fed traffic to your site instead, you got a pretty serious security vulnerability. So they're definitely kind of adding in another issue. And, of course, the whole thing of Flash Player is Adobe's, right? They own it. Yep. Doesn't matter what browser you're using, it's one company that actually holds that in. And that's not
good. Well, that makes it easier to make that makes programming more consistent. I can see that angle on it.
That's true.
Idea of catching keystrokes though and timing them, that seems like it cross browser with keystroke detection is a solved issue to me.
You mean using JavaScript?
Using JavaScript.
What we're talking about is as you type on your keyboard, you're going to do a pattern a little different speed and a little different abilities. You know, if you're using your pinky or not, depending on the characters you're hitting, and the way you type is relatively standard. And if I type and somebody else types, to look at that over a long period of time, you can get kind of a fingerprint of my typing ability. So what they're doing with this BayFed login thing is they're kind of looking at that fingerprint over a period of time. And if it starts to vary severely, they're going to say, hey, this looks weird. And then they're going to ask a security question, which theoretically I set up and I only know, like, what my favorite color is or something. But the problems about biometric stuff like this is if I break my finger, my system doesn't work, right? I'm going to type differently. Or if I'm tired, or if I'm typing with one hand, or, you know, my kid is smacking with me with a bat or something, I'm not going to type the same. So there's all these types that it's going to fail. So their fail point is not to kick you out of the system. The fail point is to ask you more security questions. So I kind of like what they're doing. I also kind of think they're implementing it a little strange. and the whole issue of throwing Flash in there as the solution. I wish it was Java, at least.
Well, thanks for having me on, Lyle.
Miles, it's always a pleasure.
For you, if you're,
you got some tomatoes? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Hey, are you going to buy the house or what?
We don't know yet.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, let me know. All right, I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, take care.
Yeah, definitely.
This is awesome. Oh. It's like a little geek reunion on GeekSpeak.
He's been gone
Everyone's
for 2 weeks.
Different places.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe, Ryder Brooks, and Jesse Wilkins. We are taking calls with any questions you'd like. We can handle anything, seriously. The phone numbers, try us out. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Now, last week, I went ahead and suggested to podcast listeners to go ahead and call us. And, of course, you can't call us because I didn't want to give out my personal phone number and take calls all hours. But anyway, we did get someone recorded something and asked us that. So here it is.
Hey, guys. My name is Jeff, and I'm sending you a message from Cambridge, Massachusetts. I love the show, and I listen to the show as a podcast, so I was excited during your last show to have you bring up podcasts and recommendations for different podcasts. I don't really have a question, but I wanted to just add a couple of podcast recommendations to the pile. The first one is called The Brainy Gamer, and it's a podcast that is done by a theater professor in the Midwest. He talks about video games from the point of view of someone who's really interested in narrative and character. And I don't actually play video games. I'm not really interested in video games, but I've listened to a number of the podcasts at The Brainy Gamer, and they're really interesting. The second recommendation I have is called Robots Podcast. If you haven't listen to the Robots Podcast, I highly recommend it. I've only actually listened to the first three, but they're really great. And if you need any sort of teaser to get you to listen to this, I would say that one of the most recent episodes talks about a company that makes robotic penguins that swim.
We covered
well
the story, right?
Robotic
right,
penguins.
Ben? You guys?
Yes, we yeah. did. Penguin that penguin? Swims in water and in the air.
Yeah.
I think it was like two or three months ago.
Yeah,
I love the show.
It was a video that was pretty cool.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for listening, and thank you for recording and taking the time to send us in something. I'm not sure if we're going to do that much anymore, but if you feel like you want to ask us a question, you're via podcast, and it's going to be a good audio thing, please send it away. What the heck? You can send us an email anytime you'd like. Go to geekspeak.org and just fill out our little form there, and you'll start connecting with us directly. Just a little spam protection for us is the reason we have a form. Now, speaking of robots, you know, Al's not here, though he does have a crazy USB of the week he submitted to me, and I'm going to play at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. But one thing that he did mention, we have up on the site, is a crazy, creepy Japanese crawling robot. Ryder, you saw this video?
I did, yeah.
And how creepy is it?
It's moderately creepy. I've seen creepier things on the internet.
I think it's more creepy in person.
Probably.
If you were there in person.
How big is it?
So what it is, it's this robot. It looks like a Japanese man crawling on the ground, and it just crawls forward on the ground. They put it outside, and they have people walking by and looking at it like, what the heck is that guy doing crawling on the ground? It's just really weird.
So it looks like a humanoid crawling?
Yeah, it's a Japanese businessman.
Like, yeah, it looks like a Japanese
businessman. He's got like a suit on?
He does, yeah.
Nice.
It's a performance art statement.
Yeah, that's really creepy.
Yeah, and then it's performance art, and the performance artist is dressed up like a nurse, and so she tends to the robot when it's, you know, going the wrong direction or if she needs to turn it off. In the video, they show that a lot of the circuitry is actually underneath the robot's bum. So that's an interesting, strange thing, seeing her take a screwdriver to that area.
So if you want to see that, it's up on the GeekSpeak website. You can listen to it. You can watch it right now. All right, from Santa Cruz, Sue, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I'm running Tiger, looking for the most cost-effective way to back it up. I have a spare plug and a USB port, Mac OS 10.4.11.
Mm-hmm. Is it like an iMac or a...
iMac.
Garmin? Okay. Well, Jesse, you do this kind of thing all the time. I go into people's homes. Of course, what you could do is you could hire Jesse to come to your house. But, Jesse, what's the good solution?
Yeah, I like, depends if you want to actually spend money or try to find something for free. The best software I've found that I like for Mac 10.4 is ProSoft's data backup software. So the company is ProSoft Engineering, and their software is called Data Backup, and they're on version 3 of that right now. That's the one I use with all my clients. I highly recommend it. I like it a lot.
Jesse, can you submit that to our Etherpad, and then I'll,
I can.
We'll and you're using like an external USB or FireWire drive to back that up to, or what medium?
Yeah, personally, I back up to just USB hard drive. So yeah, you can back up to a USB hard drive, a little flash drive. It all depends on how much data you really have.
And is that like under $100, under $50?
I think it's like under $75.
Okay, so somewhere in that area. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of expense. There's also Apple's backup solution, which I think they're still running, backup.app. But you've got to be – you don't like it?
I've never liked that.
It's kind of weird.
No, so the biggest thing, Sue, is the hardware expense, right? So you're going to spend about $100 to get a big USB external hard drive, and you can get backed that up at a Fry's or Santa Cruz Electronics or some – depending on – you're in Santa Cruz. And that's just a USB hard drive. That's pretty
much – Can I get it at Costco?
You can get them at Costco, sure. Probably the cheapest.
Yeah. And they may actually have backup software included in some of those.
Yeah, lots of times there's a one-button thing on the front that has software. Sometimes it doesn't work so hot on a Mac.
Lots of them have both. Though nowadays they'll do a Windows version and a Mac version.
You can definitely try that software, you know, since you've gotten their hardware. Mm-hmm. And that's really the biggest expense. Then after that, if you want to do it delicately yourself, you can just copy files over to it manually.
I would like to have an automatic.
Yeah, well then try get the hard drive, try the software you like on there. If you don't like it, you can get this ProSoft data backup.
It's ProSoftENG.com.
Okay.
How much does it cost to have someone do it for you?
Jesse, you charge what's your first hour rate? Oh, wait, we can't talk about that.
I can't say.
What we can do is you can email Jesse directly and ask him how much he'd charge.
It's
and
worth other, it. That's
and other geeks that do have businesses like this in the Santa Cruz area or the Central Coast area, go ahead and send me an email, and I'll talk to you a bit, and I'll mention notes about you as well for people that ask questions of geeks in the home. So Jesse's available, and there's lots of other people like that.
What's the email address?
You know, Jesse's site is wilkinsconsulting.us, and that's actually from the GeekSpeak site. You can go there. You can always send notes like this to geekspeak.org, and I'll forward them off to people in the community that I know that does this kind of business. So geekspeak.org, the contact us button, is probably the easiest thing to do. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you, Sue, for the call.
Super duper.
Sorry, I cut you out instead of Sue. Yeah. Sorry, Ben. What was that? Super Duper? Use Super Duper?
Oh, yeah. I said I like Super Duper. That's my personal favorite. It does bootable backups, and it does smart backups. It's also – you also have to buy it. I think it's like somewhere around 50, 40, 50 bucks.
They have a free version as well.
The thing with Super Duper, of course, is you're doing a complete mirror of your hard drive, and there's no repetitive backup. So let's say you're working on a document, and then you accidentally delete it, or your kid's playing, and they delete it, and then you do a backup again. That backup's gone. Right, that file is
that's
gone.
That's true. You have to make sure that you don't delete files that you actually want.
Right. But and a lot of backup solutions actually keep kind of a snapshot going, and the backup gets added to, and so you could still look at your computer 3 months ago and find that one file. It hasn't erased. True. And that depends on the software type. What was the other thing you said, Super Duper?
The advantage of having a bootable backup, though, of course, is that if your hard drive fails and your computer just stops working, you can actually keep working and boot into OS X off of your external hard drive.
Yep.
So that's really nice. You don't actually have any downtime, and you can keep working. Your computer doesn't just break when your hard drive fails.
And what we're talking about is you take a FireWire or USB drive on a Mac environment, run this application called SuperDuper. It completely copies your main computer while it's running on this other thing and keeps it up to date. So this other drive is actually completely a running functional drive. If, let's say, you then break your main drive, fails, you plug this thing in, change where you boot from, and your machine keeps on working the same way with an extra peripheral that's pretty required. Let's go ahead and go to another question in Santa Cruz. Seth, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good. What's your question today?
Well, so I'm a student of web design. I'm starting to make my first
site. Can you speak right into your mic if you can, or your phone?
All right. I'm studying Joomla and web design right now, and content management systems. And I want to know, where can I go to get a good sort of, this will bring you up to speed on current best practices for security for managing your website.
First off, I do not recommend Joomla. I've had a bit of experience with it. It's a nightmare. Unless there's a really good reason for you to be doing Joomla, don't. WordPress and Drupal are much better alternatives. If you want to spend a little bit of money, there's a few other apps out there, but Expression Engine is really awesome. Joomla is just a mess. And the reason I mention it is that I've run I probably oversee about 20 or 30 different websites with different technologies, and the one that I've actually had a lot of hacking and problems with is Joomla, and it's just kind of a pain. So in any case, you're doing Joomla, and a lot of people, I'm sure, would say that's awesome. So
I've also got a WordPress site and a Drupal site up.
Yeah.
I just found that WordPress being the easiest, Drupal being the most difficult as far as learning curve is
yes.
concerned. I thought like Joomla's sort of like
right in the middle.
Learning curves. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Okay, so you want
to
get...
I'm willing to learn Drupal. I just need to know, was there a website that covers a lot of really good intermediate security issues?
Yeah. Just as a little side note, are you in Santa Cruz?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I know like the Hope Foundry just had like this month-long Drupal class.
Oh, I know. I missed it.
Okay.
I heard about it. I have a friend who's a social networking and a consultant. She's telling me you got to check it out because you're intimidated by Drupal and the mess of a... The big thing for me is that I come from a communication side of things,
mm-hmm.
and when I look at how Drupal presents its information on its
exactly.
own website, it's just garbage. And then you look at Joomla, and it's so well organized for giving you what you need.
And Drupal's administrative interface is a mess, too. But in any case, you want to know a little bit about security fundamentals?
Yeah.
And in what way? Like, you want to be able to analyze what your weak points are?
Well, I want to know, like, okay, so when I'm setting up my site, especially the content management stuff where I'm going to be managing users and user group and user information, I want to know, like, where can I go to sort of, like, understand what people are doing to websites, where are the vulnerabilities, like, is there, like for example, like, I go to, like, Flashdot, and Flashdot has a certain type of information, but I'm wondering is there a security for the masses kind of website that has continuous, like, blogs or discussions?
Yes, there are hundreds of them. I don't have a good reference for you. And I know what you mean. Like, even if you participated, for example, on the Joomla administrative security forum area, right, the level of discussion they're having assumes a base understanding that's pretty complex. It's difficult for me to analyze this one because this happens to be an area that I'm pretty strong in, and so it's hard for me to look at it from a beginning perspective.
It's a common problem with all advanced
I agree.
Managers.
And it's one of those things where what you're doing when you're taking an application like Joomla, Drupal, or WordPress is you're kind of relying on that community to keep it safe and secure as long as you update and patch it all the time. That's crucial if you were in any of these systems because it's only a few months until there's a vulnerability shows up, and you've got to be on top of it to upgrade. And the upgrade path is crucial. So whatever tool you use, follow those security areas. So if you choose Drupal, for example, follow the news group for the security on Drupal so you're up to speed on it. And don't let it lax because you will get hacked and it'll be a mess. That's the best option I've got for you.
I do see some security focus on the Joomla forum sites.
Yeah, there's always is on these tools, definitely. So I think that's the best you've got. Also, there's this great radio program you can listen to on Saturdays at 10, and they cover a little bit of topics like this. So you're welcome to do it. Also, if you have any questions on on this kind of security stuff, our forums, we do participate in. The guy that runs the forums, Alex Sleas in Southern California, one of the geeks, he runs the forums. He happens to be a security expert for a big bank, and he does know a lot about this stuff. So if you ever have questions of that nature, put on the forums, maybe send a note also to ping us through our email, and I'm sure he'll love to talk to you about this.
Hey, outstanding. Thank you so much. And is this available for through podcast?
You bet. GeekSpeak, we podcast it every week. I get it up about an hour or 2 hours after the show is over, and then NPR scrapes it and gets it up by 5 or so. So by Sunday morning, almost every week, you've got GeekSpeak podcast. And
do you have a lot of archived stuff, too? Can I go back and listen to old episodes?
I think back to 2004. I think we've got episodes back to 2004. You could listen to GeekSpeak for a month, easy, straight.
That sounds great. Thank you so much
for calling. Bye-bye. That was
including while sleeping.
Including while sleeping. But why would you want to do that? You'd wake up dumber.
Osmosis, right? Isn't that how it works?
That's something like that. Hey, you listen to GeekSpeak.
I've heard about it.
My name is Lyle Troxell. On the show, we have Jesse Wilkins. He's a consultant who can come to your home and help with Windows and Macintosh problems and questions and concerns and all that and set up your home network and DSL. And he really knows his business. We have Ryder Brooks. Ryder Brooks is a support engineer at Sun Microsystems. He's not so available for your home, but he's always here available via our forums and via email from GeekSpeak. Actually, you probably don't participate in the forums much, right? More the email thing.
Yeah, more.
If you got a question about, Unix.
If you call me out, I'll answer it.
All right, so if you ask me to call him out on the forums, I will. And then also we have Ben Jaffe, who's very active everywhere. Ben Jaffe right now is in San Diego teaching people how to use computers and edit video and things of that nature. That's his summer gig. My name is Lyle Troxell. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. And the only person on the line right now is Karen from SoCal. Karen, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello there.
What's your question today?
Okay, well, I use the enemy Internet Explorer, and here's my problem. It takes sometimes it loads quickly, and I could use it without a problem, and sometimes it's really slow. So my question is that normal for any Internet browser? And if not, is it my Internet provider that has too much traffic, or is it, you know, something to do with Internet Explorer or some other thing like a virus? I'm just curious if I can solve that somehow, or if I just have to live with it.
It's all of that, and yes, you have to live with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the thing is that, yeah, sometimes there's a bandwidth issue between you and your provider, especially if you're doing like wireless. Sometimes a microwave will come on, and that will disturb it, slows things down. Mm-hmm. There's your DSL connection is based off of phone lines or your cable connection, and all those things are weakness to electrical interference. And then there's the Internet itself, which is a big smorgasbord of mess.
Yeah. Well, I find often is the case, especially if it seems spotty where some sites are fast and some are slow, it can actually be a DNS, a name resolution problem, where
yes,
it takes the, you know, the host name that you type into the URL or a link or something that's embedded in your page, and it has to resolve that to an IP address, and those are talking to different servers in order to determine the correct IP address, and that can take a while and slow down the loading of the page.
Now there is one other trick that's really probably the biggest reason why web pages seem slow, and that is about the content that's on them. So for example, if you've started your web browser, you've been surfing for a long time, then you visit a site that has Flash. Flash has to be in kind of enabled and started up. And then the resources that the Flash app starts grabbing is going to take some time. And depending on your rendering engine, basically your browser, how it displays content, sometimes these things can really stop the page from displaying anything until it has more information. So let's say it used to be that if you had an image in the beginning of the page, until that image was loaded, it couldn't structure the page, it couldn't lay it out at all. The newer browsers handle that really well. They now kind of assume the image will be there, and they'll kind of structure the page, and then you'll see it move around as more stuff shows up. I don't know how Internet Explorer, what, you're using 7?
Yeah.
I don't know how good Internet Explorer is with this rendering issue. I know that Safari is really good, and Google's Chrome is really good on this, and Firefox is really good on this. So you could try those browsers just from, not the security perspective, but from the perspective of rendering the page correctly. Because what's actually being sent to you is more instructions for the computer, right? HTML and CSS. That stuff comes in, and the computer then has to interpret it, and depending on what it loads. Now, the last part of it that's probably the biggest reason why pages are slow has to do with advertising and scripts. So for example, Google has this really cool service which analyzes web traffic, and you can, as a web developer, you can put their little tag on your web page at the end in a script. Or if you're including a Flickr feed, again, you use a script element and put it in the page. Those things are actually remote scripts that then have to go and contact another website, get that file. Every time you connect to a website, you open a connection, that takes some overhead. So it gets that file, and then it has to execute that file, and then maybe load more content. So it's those kind of things that make things really heavy. And this is all based on processing on your front-end machine, the JavaScript and the Flash. Your machine has to do this processing power, and that has to do with resources on your local machine. So if you're running lots of things like your email client and maybe Word and Excel and maybe Photoshop, and you're browsing the web, as you do these things, it requires your computer to restructure its processing power to do those things. And that's what can slow things down. So there's a long smorgasbord description of what it is. Also, it could just be a virus.
Yeah. Also, you just want to make sure your computer's obviously safe and clean. So current antivirus software, current like firewall software.
Which slows everything down,
down, but it also protects you from bad things. But, yeah, it really is computer process time versus amount of available resources, and clean up your Internet tracks. You know, Internet Explorer has, like, a clear the temporary files, clear the history, clear the cookies.
Yeah.
Those can all slow stuff down.
And if you do peer-to-peer sharing, you can actually, if you're uploading files or, you know, not necessarily even browser-related, if you are saturating your upload bandwidth limit, that will affect your download.
Yeah.
Because it hinders the communication, that's the bidirectional communication.
Just saying,
that's needed.
I want this file, I want this file slowed down by that.
So if you're ever uploading files at their maximum speed, that will slow down your web browser.
And in fact, that exact problem that Ryder's talking about. That's a plan using upload bandwidth. But if you're being managed remotely by a virus, right? Somebody's actually put something on your system and they're using it for sending email and things. That is upload speed and processing power. And that's why we say when your machine's infected, you can have a lot of performance problems. It's that kind of results mm-hmm. accidentally. That's why you need the virus protection stuff.
Okay. And then one last thing is when I went from, I think, Internet Explorer 6 to 7, it asked me something about a phishing filter. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what I said to that, but what's the right thing as far as, well, how should I handle that? And what is that, and what's the best answer for that phishing filter?
Well, it's designed to protect you, you know, in Microsoft's way, that however they can. So they're saying, hey, we developed this new piece of software to help protect you from these phishing attacks. Do you want to enable it? And I don't even know why they ask. I mean,
just enable it.
Just do it. I do it. I haven't read about any negative reports about it, but you never know. I mean,
yeah, probably the worst is that you get nagged or something.
It might slow it down because it's got to run another script, and that's
yes, it could.
It will run. It will slow things down because every time you make a request, it's going to do an analysis by going to another service. So yeah, it's going to slow internet traffic mm-hmm. down. What's your connection anyway? DSL, cable, dial-up.
I have phone DSL.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Karen, for the call.
Thank you.
All right, bye. Bye-bye. Let's go ahead.
Problem with the internet.
Yeah.
Is always when I have far too many tabs open. Mm. That's my personal problem. So just, you know, another thing to think about, if you have a whole bunch of tabs open, then your web browser might actually start running slowly, especially if you have YouTube videos cached in the background that you watch but you didn't close, things like that.
And Firefox
is
notorious.
So if you shut down the entire web browser, then it might fix it.
And Firefox is notorious. Now that it saves tabs automatically, Firefox is this big heavy load for me, right? I've got 20 or 30 tabs open in 5 different browsers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a mess.
It's a blessing and a curse, too.
Yep, it's true.
It's a blessing and a curse because I close Firefox and then I reopen it mm-hmm. just to open up a simple web page or do a Google search, and it loads up 50 web pages.
That's why I'm doing Safari as my default browser. Anyway, let's take another call, shall we? From Paso Robos, Ed, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, sometimes when I boot up my computer running XP with the 3 update, mm-hmm. The tray at the bottom comes up white rather than blue. And also a few other minor details noticeable. Then I shut it down and start it again, and most times it comes up with the usual blue tray at the bottom.
Very curious.
Is it like a white blank tray, like there's nothing on it?
A white tray with the usual, you know, icons, the little, not the icons on the...
on the blue one, but other icons.
Yeah, the ones that you single click
on the desktop
left.
Now, what about the desktop? Does the desktop look different? You have a different picture or anything up there?
No, the only thing different other than that is when I go to shut it down, hit the start, and that comes up. The color of the buttons for shutting it off and is different, and the lettering of the user up at the top is different.
Okay, this is not... first off, this feels like Stump the Chumps from Car Talk, because we are definitely stumped. By the way, Car Talk's coming up in like 5 minutes. But
good.
I don't know the answer to this, except that it sounds like a resource thing. When you say white, do you mean like stark white or shaded white? Stark white. So this sounds like a resource problem, especially since the fonts aren't being loaded. The machine is having some difficulty loading files. Right off the bat, I'm going to say get a new hard drive. Because you're probably, why not? Because hard drives fail all the time. But it's probably something with that, and restarting it fixes it. I'm a little stumped.
That seems quite strange. I think it's one of those things you really need to see to go, oh, that's the reason why, you know, because we're all trying to picture it, I think, and we're not really seeing what you're seeing.
You know what, Ed?
The icons at the bottom that you click on, like an AVG and Commodore. A firewall and all those are exactly the same, no difference.
Yeah, it's just a resource thing. This happens when a machine is really overburdened. It can't load a resource like a font or images. It's having trouble loading those for some reason. And the reason it's having trouble is a little frustrating to me. It could be because you have some infected machine. It could be because your hard drive's going bad or memory blocks are going bad. It could be a hardware problem. Most likely is not an OS problem. It's most likely a hardware problem.
Yeah, I would say definitely try to do, you know, run virus scan, run any security scanning software.
Yeah. Hard drive space could be a problem.
Could be.
So I hear Jesse saying, you should get me into your home. But I think this might be one of those ones you want to have someone come help you. Yeah.
occasionally I'm low on virtual memory and has to increase that.
That would definitely.
I think you
try booting in safe mode and see if you can get it to reoccur in safe mode. If that's not a problem, it's probably some application or driver or something that's loading that's interfering.
And you boot to safe mode by once you're restarting your machine, once you see the Windows screen show up, push F8 and you'll get a menu and choose safe mode. And the idea behind that is that if it fails during safe mode, it's most likely a hardware problem.
Okay, good luck on it.
Good luck.
maybe it needs more RAM. Maybe it needs more resources. That's sort of what it sounds like.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to take any more calls today because we've got a little bit more going on. At the end of the show, I've got this great little bit from Al about crazy USB of the week. The geeks today were Ben Jaffe and Ryder Brooks, and our special guest geek, Jesse Wilkins, is a consultant and is available for consultation in your home or business in the Central Coast area. You can learn all about him by going to today's Geek Speak show. We have a link over to his website, which is wilkinsconsulting.us. All right, Al.
Hey, everybody. This is Al. I've got a crazy USB device to share, even though I'm not there. I'm in LA this weekend for a wedding at the house of the immortal Charo. Yes, that Charo from Love Boat. Turns out my wife's cousin is marrying Charo's niece. Anyway, in honor of the 70s, I thought I'd tell you about the USB disco ball. Just plug it into any free USB port and the party begins at your desk. It has such amazing funky features as an on-off switch, colored lenses, and a diameter of 7 centimeters, which of course, being the decimal system, means nothing to us Americans. But hey, this isn't Bogue, man. You will love this to the max. Just don't Bogart it all to yourself. I'll catch you on the flip side. Keep on trucking, you closet disco queen. Oh, one more thing. There's no free record inside, so supply your own music.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at KOSP.org. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week.